Okay, good afternoon. The redistricting advisory committee. I'm Glenna Bramble. I'm your liaison for tonight. I ask that when you are speaking to unmute yourself, but when you are not to mute yourself, if not, I will mute you. And also, I'm going to call roll. So I ask that everybody that's on the committee unmute yourself at this time. Juan Miguel Munoz Morris. Emily Gatfield.
Present.
Michael Cross. And let me know if
present.
I say your name incorrectly. Michael
present.
Gross.
Present.
Howard Miller.
Present.
Alfredo Morales.
Present.
Raven Malone.
Present.
We do have a quorum. Thank you. We do have a quorum. So the next agenda item that we will have will be our welcome from our chair, Director Tony Estramera.
Thank you, Glenna. Good evening, everyone. My name is Tony Estramera, and I have the privilege of serving as the chair for the Valley Water Board of Directors. We thank you for joining us today for this Redistricting Advisory Committee orientation meeting. First and foremost, I want to begin by thanking each member of the committee for your service, since the redistricting process is critical to ensuring our communities have equal representation and a voice in the decisions that affect them. Redistricting is an enormous undertaking that requires knowledge of the community and the ability to listen to the region's various stakeholders. Each of you have been selected for your knowledge of your respective communities for the purpose of recommending to the board updated district boundaries based on the most current census data. One of the most important aspects of your work, however, will be that it is conducted in a thorough, inclusive, and transparent manner. As you may know, this decennial census has been a bit more complex than in previous years, and as a result, we won't have the census data for a few months. However, the committee will be engaging in several redistricting-related activities over the next several months. As you begin your work, please keep in mind the redistricting effort will require the combined effort of many, including valuable input from the community. One of your most important responsibilities will be to listen to the public and to give public comment the serious consideration that it deserves. Thank you again for agreeing to perform this valuable public service. We look forward to seeing your recommendations at the end of your review. Now I'll hand it over to Don Rocha and the consultant, Redistricting Partners, to provide an overview of redistricting, your role in the process, and where things stand with the census data. Don, take it away.
Thank you, Chair Estramera. That was very informational. I want to acknowledge that we have two other directors present. We might have spoken to it earlier. I want to thank them for making time this evening and participating, and also for their leadership and guidance in helping us establish this committee. So I believe we have Chair Shua and Director Santos present. Thank you both for making some time this evening.
You're welcome.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for your service.
I guess we can have people to visit the Rodney King verdict almost 28 years ago to the day.
So I'm going to jump into introductions now with staff. With us tonight, we also have some Valley Water staff that I think you should know who's present in terms of who's going to be supporting your efforts along the way as we move through this over the next, many months, hopefully not too many months. We have myself, Don Rocha. I'm Deputy of Government Relations here at Valley Water. Good to see you all. We have Jim Webb. He's a senior management analyst. He's probably been communicating with you offline on some of the particulars and the background stuff to get us to where we are today. And then Lisa Flores, she's a fellow with Valley Water. She's going to be taking some notes for any follow-up stuff that we may need to provide. And then, you know, Glenna Bramble, who's our management analyst too here at Valley Water out of the clerk's office, and she's doing an excellent job of keeping us on track. And I want to thank Glenna for all of her pre-work leading up to this. It's been absolutely fantastic. We could have done this without you. And then finally, Rachel Gibson. She's Chief of External Affairs, my direct supervisor and boss. Thank you, Rachel, for making time. Moving on, we can slide over to the consultant team and let them introduce themselves to you.
Thank you. My name is Paul Mitchell. I'm the owner of Redistricting Partners, and we will be helping you through a number of different aspects of this work, and we're excited to be here. I have with us Chris Chafee, who is the COO of Redistricting Partners, and he'll oftentimes be the person who will be doing this kind of role of presenting and helping facilitate. He and I both have done dozens of redistrictings. And Kimmy Shigatani, who is the Chief Administrative Officer for Redistricting Partners. She is the person who will be a direct contact with staff and helping manage the process as we get through the entirety of the redistricting.
Thank you, Paul. In the role of the consultants, this is a firm that we hired who specializes in these efforts, and they're going to be providing support to not only just Valley Water, but primarily to you and the work that you do. So I want to thank them for making time this evening as well, and also want to thank you pre-work in terms of the amount of work and efforts you're going to have to go through to get us to the end of this for to present something to our board for their consideration. So thank you for your time, Paul. As far as the next slide, I believe this is the part of the agenda where we ask of our committee members to elect a chair pro tem. And, you know, generally on a Brown-acted body, we have to follow Robert's Rule of Order, so we have to establish at least a chair, whether it be temporary or permanent. That's really going to be up to you. But at this stage, in order for us to proceed through the agenda, to make a motion to accept the report or to adjourn the meeting, we do need to have someone who kind of leads that discussion. It's not a major obligation, but from this point on, I'd like to defer to the committee and see if there's any recommendations or nominations that anyone wants to make for a temporary chair. And if you have any questions about this process, feel free to ask.
Excuse me, Don.
Yes.
We should have the members introduce themselves and share a little bit about their background so that they know who they need to choose.
Right over that slide. Thank you, Chair Estramera. So before we do that, and maybe that'll help us in the selection of the chair, why don't we start with, I'll just make it easy on us and go to District 1. Juan, would you mind introducing yourself and saying hello, please?
I don't believe he has attendance, Don.
Oh, that he still hasn't shown. All right, then we'll go to District 2. Emily? Good to see you.
Hi, Don. My name is Emily Gatfield. I am a homeowner in San Jose. I've lived down here for just over 20 years. The work that I do is a little bit nonspecific. I am a political consultant, not generally in campaigns, but in issues-based work. And I don't know what else anybody wants to know about me, so I'll move on to the next person.
Thank you, Emily. Michael Cross?
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to be involved in this 2021 Redistricting Advisory Committee. I'm a little background for me is I'm retired. I'm presently acting as the president of the Penitencia Neighborhood Association. And through Richard, I was able to get involved in this, and I thought it would be a interesting engagement. So I look forward to the activity, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Michael Gross.
Thanks, Don. Michael Gross, I'm lived here in District 4 now 30 years, pretty close. I'm a director of sustainability for Zanka Recycling and Green Waste Recovery, both companies here in the Bay Area. And I mainly focus on developing new recycling operations and figuring out what we're trying to do with all our stuff. So this is pretty important to me because what we also have to take into consideration is also all our water issues. And so following what's happening here is actually hitting home for me. So glad to be of service.
Thank you. Howard Miller?
Yeah, I'm Howard. So I've been in the Valley since 85. I've been living in Saratoga since the early 90s. I was elected to Saratoga City Council 3 times, served as mayor 3 times. I know you guys are looking for a chair, so I'll just throw a little bit out there, right? I was elected chair of the VTA Policy Committee 4 years. I served as chair of Solid Waste District for 3 years, chair of Silicon Valley Clean Energy for 1 year. So I'd be willing to do it for today if you guys need somebody. Really, I'm a high-tech guy. I retired from Apple after 30 years of high-tech, 20 patents. If you have an iPhone and you've ever printed, I co-invented AirPrint, so you've seen my stuff. And I don't know, a couple of years ago, I picked up a adjunct professorship, and I teach computer science here in Saratoga at West Valley College. And I do woodworking for fun, and I got 5 kids, and we use a lot of water. So anyway, I'm into anything about engineering, and the engineering of water is amazing. So anyway, I'm excited to be part of this.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Alfredo Morales?
Yes, good evening. My name is Alfredo Morales. I've been an attorney for 45 years in San Jose. In fact, I'm born and raised in San Jose, East Side San Jose, where I still live. I practice primarily criminal defense work and personal injury work. I've have an interest in the water district. I think that the districting issue is going to be very important in the future. I know that when I was very young, just out of high school, I worked on getting districting done in the city of San Jose when city council members were still elected at large. And I'm very happy to see the fruit of that work 45 years later. I can see that the San Jose City Council is a lot more representative than it used to be than when I was very young. I'm still practicing law, although I think I'm going to start hanging it all up shortly. I'll be working at the semi-retirement. Don't know if there's much more I can tell that would be of interest to this committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Morales. Raven Malone?
Hi, my name is Raven Malone. I'm in District 7. I previously ran for city council in Palo Alto. I lost, but it was a really nice experience, and I've been really involved in local politics since then. I heard a lot of you speak about how many years you've lived in the Bay Area and or whether or not you've grown up here, and I'm the complete opposite. I'm actually a transplant, a very recent transplant. I moved here in 2017, 18. So I haven't been here that long, but I love it here, and I'm excited to work with you all. I don't really know what else to say. Oh, I'm an engineer. I'm in tech. I have undergrad and master's degree in electrical engineering, and my career has been primarily defense.
Well, thank you, and thank you all, and I'm going to thank Chair Estermeyer again. That was a great nudge. We learned a lot, and it also may have helped us in that selection of a chair pro tem. So with that, the floor is yours if there's any nominations.
I nominate Howard Miller.
I would second that.
Okay.
Who was the nominator?
Alfredo Morales.
Thank you, Alfredo.
You're welcome.
And the second was Michael Gross.
That is correct.
Thank you.
This is a question for Michael Krause. I was looking at your chart there, and I noticed that there's different districts, 1 through 7. And I was curious to to understand that I was identified as District 3, but right now I reside in District 4 under David Cohen. So I don't know if we have two representatives from District 4 here or there's a misprint.
No, you're my District 3 representative. I'm in District 3, which includes 4.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, the districts are not consistent with each other, whether they're city councils, whether they're Santa Clara supervisors or Valley Water directors. So the boundaries are different. So yes, even though you do reside in District 4 at San Jose City Council, you are in Director Santos's District 3 Valley Water District.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Hey, Don, let me butt in. That's one of the reasons you guys are all here. They might want to make those changes.
Thank you for that encouragement, Director Santos. Very subtle of you. So with that said, we have a motion and a second on the floor. I'll get out of the way. Glenna?
Do we have any other nominates? Okay, if we do have no other ones, I'm going to call for the question. I ask that all of you unmute yourself so I can do a roll call vote. Juan Miguel Munoz Morris, did he come on?
No.
Emily Gatfield.
Yay. I vote yes.
Michael Cross.
I concur with the
Michael
recommendation.
Gross.
Yay.
Howard Miller. Alfredo Morales.
Aye.
Raven Malone.
Aye.
Okay, unanimously passes that Howard Miller will be our pro tem chair, and he can conduct the rest of the meeting along with Don. Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully Don is right here. Thank you guys for your confidence, and I'm sure we'll get through it. So, Don, I know you have the script and the agenda, but if I'm following along, item 5 is what we're doing next, and item 5 has 3 parts to it. And this is discussion and possible actions. So I think the first thing in there is a presentation from government relations and our consultants on why we're here and what we're doing.
Great. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to slide over now and ask, moving on to the next slide. So this generally captures what we're going to be doing this evening and providing you. This is a briefing, so to speak, for the Redistricting Advisory Committee to kind of set the stage for you as to the status of where we're at and what the expectations are. So you're going to see some of the presentation this evening that's going to provide some background and also purpose. So hopefully you have a better understanding of what your role is going to be from here through the end of this effort. So as you can see, these are the topics that we'll be discussing this evening. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, the role and objectives of the committee. Next slide. So here, this section covers the purpose, as I mentioned, and also your role in terms of representing the public. And as has been said by our chair, Esther Mayer, very well, is we want to thank you for dedicating your time. We know that a lot of this work doesn't happen without volunteers such as yourself, regardless of what level of government this is. So your role is really critical to this, and I know the board respects your participation and looks forward to the recommendations coming forward from you, as our chair mentioned already. Next slide, please. So here we have a little bit more information on that, and I'm just going to touch on a few key points here, and really the purpose of the committee is to act as an advisory body. And then second, you're representing the public, and you're going to help shape the revised electoral maps should they be needed to be reshaped. And I'll let our consultants talk a little bit about that. And again, our board is going to be taking action on whatever recommendation comes out of this. Let's see here. On this slide, we have also, you're going to oversee the study, so to speak, and also the public outreach meetings. And we'll have a number of these, and you'll see the schedule later in the presentation as to what that kind of commitment is going to look like. And then you're going to guide the development of one or more draft maps as I mentioned, that'll be provided to their board of directors for their review and approval. So there may be just more than one, but we'll get to that point later. The training that you're going to be having, this is what we're going to cover. I'm not going to go through each one of these. They're there for you to see. I also want to offer to any of the committee members that at any point, if you have a question, please don't hesitate to stop us or ask for any clarification. And I'll do my best to either answer or I'll defer to the consultants and see if they have any background in any particular area. Next slide, please. As far as the community outreach, there will be a good amount of community outreach, mainly for these meetings. So we can have some public participation beyond just your participation. Our board is very strong and committed to engaging the public, and they've made it very clear to staff here, whether it's at our CEO level, Rick Callender, or our chiefs, that we need to engage the public as often as we can. And so we'll be doing some efforts, whether it's print, notifying the public of these meetings, and of course we're going to do our best to cover all foreign language. Social media will be covered, and then community organization events will hopefully flyer a little bit as we get hopefully into the non-pandemic time. And then our website, I don't know if you had a chance to view it, there is some information on our website already around your efforts. And then we have this new effort here, Be Heard webpage. I think what I'd like to do on that one is maybe provide a little bit more information to each one of you individually at a later stage so I can explain a little bit better. So I think that covers the main slides from the government relations team. Now I want to turn it over to the consultants and Paul. Well, actually, why don't we stop there and see if there's any questions from the committee? My apologies, Paul.
That's fine.
Does anyone have questions? And there is a little hand raise thing for those who are familiar with Zoom, just in case everybody wants to speak at once. I have just one quick question to start off, and that is, so we're going to make a recommendation. The board doesn't have to take our recommendation, or they could modify the recommendation, but does that ever really happen?
Well, given that these are done once every 10 years, my experience was that an elected body, they adopted the recommendations that came forward from that committee. I'm going to look to maybe Paul if he has any other experience with other entities, municipalities, or government agencies not taking the direction or guidance from any of these advisory committees. But I haven't seen that.
I can tell you, Don, that this is Tony Estramera. I can tell you that it really depends on the census itself, what significant changes happen in population growth that the consultant will explain this later when he gets to talking about, the one person rule, one person, one vote rule. And that is that, it really depends on, and all of you, as a group will know where the growth is in the county. That might make a difference to, a certain percentage of growth. So we would have to move the line consistent with that growth. That's usually what most of us depend on. When you initially draw lines, I think there are a lot of different questions at that point. But in a situation where as most districts, including the Board of Supervisors and most cities, we already have districts drawn. So we kind of start there. It's kind of like doing a budget. We start where we are and then see where the changes are and move the lines according to the population. That's generally what happens. Sometimes other things do happen, but most of the time, that's what boards do, and that's what we as a board have done in the past.
Thank you, Chair.
A good background.
I see something here.
Yeah, I'll call him real quick for you, Don, because I got the order right here. Mike put his hand up first. Mike Krause.
Yeah, thank you for recognizing me. I had a question. I believe it was chart number 15 that there was several parameters that were background information to support this committee and this activity. I was curious if there's going to be some opportunity to review those elements of that chart 15 as it applies to what our charter is.
So the slide that showed the committee training from the Brown Act parliamentary rules, redistricting overview, the Federal Voting Rights Act. So I think what you're asking is some hard copy documents providing that explanation?
I just was curious of what kind of visibility would I get into that information so that I could effectively engage in this committee.
I think what we'll do is maybe we'll try and put together a packet that captures each one of these, as much information as we can, and get that to you after this meeting, if that's okay. And
that's
then based upon the presentation this evening, if that's not enough just in terms of the verbal presentation, we're happy to provide you as much information as we can. And forgive me if I'm not understanding your question. I'm hoping that's what you were asking.
No, that's exactly, you hit the nail on the head. Thank you.
Okay, so then we'll see if we can put a packet together that kind of captures this synopsis of all of these. And if there's any one in particular that you feel you need a little bit more information on, that's what we're here for. We're here to support you and provide you whatever you need to make the right decision and the right recommendation. So
thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Yeah, excellent question. Alfredo Morales, you've got a question?
Yes, thank you. I had looked through the materials and perhaps I missed it, but I haven't seen a map showing the current district lines. And for myself, I'd like to get that sooner than later, only because of my time constraints. My tendency is to look at things as I go along, as opposed to kind of focusing a few days before. And so I'm interested in getting that, and of course, any other materials that are going to be provided sooner than later. But right now, I would like to see a district map so I understand exactly where the lines are. And later on, when I get the growth information that was referenced by Chair Estramera, I can get a sense of where the lines are perhaps might be changed or more likely to be changed.
Okay, great. And we will provide that as well. And to use the words of Chair Estramera, that's a good question because then it'll provide you where we're starting, in his words. So thank you.
I did dig around and find a map online, but it'd be great to get one from staff that was like a PDF that we could blow up and look at the details.
You got it.
Anybody else have questions? Not seeing anybody else. It's on. I think that means maybe we can move on to the next part of this item.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm going to be going through a number of different issues that were from that list. And as I go through those, I'm happy to either take questions or wait till the end, and we can always come back to any of those elements. The first is Voting Rights Act and your Redistricting Advisory Committee. We have been calling it a RAC. Some places that do advisory redistricting committees, they call them an ARC. So you are a RAC. I think an ARC might be better for a water agency, but that's an aside. So what is redistricting? I think this is kind of a first thing to get at when we start talking about these issues so that we can understand the process that we're going to be going through. Redistricting is a process of adjusting boundaries, as was mentioned by Commissioner. I think a couple of commissioners were talking about the population changes that were happening. The most commonly talked about changes are Congress and the legislature, but within the U.S., redistricting has, you know, moved into so many other agencies. Within California, in particular, with the number of agencies that have converted to districts from at-large elections, we've had a real proliferation of the need to do this kind of redistricting. The in the district-based system, each district elects one member. So in the Santa Clara Valley Water District, we have seven districts. They were drawn in 2011 based on the 2010 census. So the Constitution requires us to have relatively equal districts, and that relatively equal districts is based on the population. You might see a lot of numbers get talked about in this process. People might start talking about voters. They might start talking about adults. They might start talking about citizen adults. But when we talk about creating districts of equal size, We're talking about it based on the total population. And this is important because when we're talking about representation, you want every member in the agency to have fair, equal representation. We did a redistricting once where an agency had two districts on either side of the agency. One had 100,000 people and one had 12,000 people. And in that instance, the area with 100,000 people, it would have taken 8 people to complain about low water pressure or some kind of problem in their neighborhood to be equivalent to one person complaining in a 12,000 person district. So balancing those districts means that everybody has the same right to representation from their elected officials. So throughout this redistricting process, we're going to be following the elements of the Constitution. If we get to any questions around real thorny constitutional issues, we might defer to legal counsel. That would include any questions around the Federal Voting Rights Act. The Fair Maps Act is a California-specific law that we will try to follow as kind of the guiding principles of this redistricting process. And then we're also going to be utilizing traditional redistricting principles that I'll go through, which are essentially the ways to ensure that redistricting is fair, open, transparent, and is ultimately done in a way that is effective for the for constituents and residents. And that they are the primary beneficiaries of the districting process. So when I talk about Federal Voting Rights Act, oftentimes when I bring it up, somebody will say, wait, I thought that they eliminated the Federal Voting Rights Act, because we hear a lot about the elimination of something that was called Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Section 5 was eliminated, and that impacted multiple counties in California that were under a rule where they had to get Department of Justice sign off on election changes. But what is still active and important for us to be following in this process is Section 2 of the Federal Voting Rights Act. And the Section 2 of the Federal Voting Rights Act, it does two things. One, it protects groups from being gerrymandered based on race, and it also provides them protections when they meet certain criteria, protections against an election system that would dilute their voting power or otherwise infringe on their rights to a free and fair election. The Federal Voting Rights Act applies to all agencies. It doesn't just apply to Congress and the legislature. It applies to our work, to the city, to the county, to the mosquito abatement district, to anything that has elections. The Voting Rights Act matters, and we'll be making sure that we're following the Voting Rights Act based on the most recent decisions out of the Supreme Court. And if there's ever, like I said, any questions, we will always defer to counsel to help kind of arbitrate any concerns that we might have. The idea of vote dilution, it can take a number of forms. Under the Voting Rights Act, let's say you created a registration system that required people to fill out a questionnaire or do to do a test to be able to vote. That would be a method of vote dilution. If you made precincts impossible to get to in low-income communities and put them on every street corner in a high-income community, that would be vote dilution. In redistricting specifically, we talk primarily about two things: tracking and packing. And the idea with that is that if you have a group that is a protected class, largely in California, we're talking about Asians, Latinos, and African Americans, and they are, let's say, living in the middle of this city. If my window is an agency, a water board or a city, and I have a group of this protected class, and I were to draw districts, every district would take just a little bit of that protected class and split it off into 5 different districts, splitting that population up so that it doesn't represent more than, maybe 15 or 12% of each district. That would be called cracking. We're taking that population and we're basically eliminating their ability to influence the outcome of an election. And we're doing that based on race. That would be a violation of the Federal Voting Rights Act, pretty clearly. One that's a little more subtle is, let's say that we had an area that was maybe big enough to be a majority of 2 districts. And somebody said, well, Paul, we want to draw a district that's right there in that heart of that area. And we want to draw one district that community is 80% of that community. And the remaining parts of that community, we want to split off into districts. They'd say, well, we're doing something. We're creating a district where this one district's going to be overwhelmingly of this one race. That is called packing. It means that you're using another method to dilute their voting strength by basically giving them a token seat. And you're saying, here, you get one seat, but you're denying them the ability to be effective at electing candidates of choice in multiple seats. As you might remember from, you know, studying it, a lot of these methods for disenfranchising voters were really developed in the South, where they were using these tools to disenfranchise communities of color. And it created the case law that now carries forward to a lot of our more modern elections. The Supreme Court has limited the ability for you to consider race when you're doing districting. So race cannot be a predominant criteria in your redistricting. So it's kind of counterintuitive because I just said that we need to make sure that we're preserving these communities when they have the ability to influence an election. But then I'm also going to say that you're not allowed to use race as the predominant factor. So the way that we deal with these two contrasting ideas is that we will not use race as a factor for devising district lines unless legal counsel believes that there is enough evidence of racially polarized voting, cohesive voting patterns among minority communities, and that they can constitute 50% or more of an individual district, and that by constituting 50% or more of an individual district, they will be able to effectively elect a candidate of choice. Now, this is something that the state legislature is going to be looking at in their redistricting. It's something that the county is going to be looking at in their redistricting. It's something that the city is going to look at in their redistricting. And so we might be able to glean from other agencies in the area whether or not groups that are minority protected classes have that cohesiveness. And we might be in a position in the end of this districting process to create, let's say, a district or two that are more than 50% of one ethnicity and consider that as a Section 2 district. But we're not going to make any of those decisions just yet. We're going to wait for the data to come out. We're going to wait for that process to take shape. So your responsibility is to comply with the Federal Voting Rights Act and to meet these standards that have been set forth in state law for agencies that are doing redistricting. The goal is to use the committee and its work to really provide integrity for the agency in its district boundaries so that the public can have confidence that when they're voting in an election, that their vote and the rights of them as a voter have been protected. And there's actually really new research that shows that redistricting commissions and committees like this go a long way to supporting the public's belief and confidence in the election system. So where we might have a lot of elements in our culture where there's questioning of election systems, this is one of the things that has worked to bring greater confidence, and that's part of what your charge is. So I'm going to update you on what's happening with the census data, because that will be one of the building blocks, as has been discussed with for our process. So there are multiple data sets in the census, but the most important data set in the census is the one that will be released on September 30th. That is the final redistricting data set that the U.S. Census is going to release. There are multiple data sets, though. So next week, you're probably going to hear that the census released a data set that allowed them to apportion members of Congress into the 435 congressional seats. You might hear a story that, you know, California lost a congressional seat or something like that. That doesn't mean that we have the data to do the redistricting. It means that the census has told us our total state population. The actual, you know, nuts and bolts of redistricting, that data that comes down in kind of the detail for us to be able to do redistricting, is still a long way out. This is the first time that the census has missed their deadlines. There are things that are happening, maybe both good and bad, with regard to us getting this data in a timely fashion. The good is that we got word today that the legacy data that they have said would be available in mid to late August will actually be here in August 16th. Legacy data is a term that none of us knew probably a month ago. It's kind of a made-up term the census put out. But it basically was a statement that they made in a lawsuit where they said, oh, we're going to provide data in a raw format for some states who have the ability to work with that data to be able to start their redistricting earlier. But if states don't have the competence to be able to work with raw data files, we will provide the full official data file still on September 30th. So we're lucky in that, we might have a lot of great engineers in Santa Clara County, up at UC Berkeley, there are some great demographers who are managing the statewide data for the Statewide Redistricting Commission and will be providing us with data from those legacy formats so that we might be able to get started on our redistricting work prior to that September 30th date. So that's the good news. The bad news is that we might have issues with lawsuits that are happening around the country. There's a three-judge panel that's going to be hearing a lawsuit out of Alabama that 16 or 19 other states have joined regarding the way that they're managing privacy in the census. And so there might be a point in this process where we communicate to your staff and that we have a meeting in the future where there might be questions about when data is going to come out. But I think that having in our mind this flexibility will serve us all well. And I think over the last year and a half, a lot of us have learned about flexibility and kind of rolling with it a little bit. So that's where we're going to be at. Now, there are other data sets that have been provided on time. The physical geography of the census has actually been released, and we have that. And then the American Community Survey, which is a survey where they go to one out of every six households over a period of 10 years. It used to be called the long form of the census. That data we have. So we have some parts of the data that will allow us to, as soon as we have that final piece, really get rolling with the final redistricting process. So, like I said, this census file and this redistricting timeline that we're under is unlike any others. One of the things that is a little bit of leeway is that agencies that don't have primaries can push their redistricting process more into 2022 and not try to be on this, real kind of razor's edge with when data is going to be released, scheduling meetings and doing all of that work, between, mid-September, October, November, when those data pieces are still going to be rolling out. So if somebody asks you, hey, the county is doing redistricting and they came out with draft maps and the city came out with draft maps, why haven't you come out with draft maps yet? It might be because they are dealing with a much earlier deadline. Their deadline right now is December 15th. We suspect that that deadline is going to shift to around January 7th or so, something like that. And for disclosure, we're actually the consultants for both City of San Jose and for the county as well. So we'll be on top of that process and be able to allow some of that work to inform our work at the Water District. In terms of next steps, we have this first hearing as an opportunity to get everybody oriented and start the process. We're going to go through trainings of some of those different elements that have been discussed. Some of these elements are going to be trainings on process management of the Brown Act or other issues. And then some of them will be more in the ideas of openness, transparency, and community engagement in redistricting. And then some elements might get into the technical aspects of redistricting. The public hearings are an important aspect of this, where what we want to do is receive from the public information about who is their community of interest. When I mentioned that you might have a community that's a protected class and it's one part of my square box that represents the agency, and I said we don't want to divide it into five pieces, if you had a community of interest in the water district, you also wouldn't want to split up that community of interest. In water district redistrictings that we've done, sometimes the community of interest is agricultural. Sometimes it's the services that part of the district's getting that the other part of the district isn't getting. One of my favorite stories from when I was a kid, my first knowledge of what a water district was that we lived in a part of town where every time the golf course turned on its sprinklers, our water pressure would drop. And so in a way, our community was a community of interest for the water district because we had actual needs that we needed the water district or other agencies to try to address for us. So these are ways that people can define communities of interest, and we want to hear from the public as to what their communities of interest are. And that's also some place where you can be informative. You might be able to help the entire committee understand what the communities of interest are for that process. So we will go through that process, and in January we will have an opportunity to look maybe at draft maps that maybe the public has provided us. You can ask us to draft maps based on the community of interest testimony and the estimated data that we've seen. And we will go through a process of meeting to discuss maps that you might want to recommend to the board. Then in March, the board will meet, take the information that you provided from this process, and they will be the ones, as it was said earlier, that will adopt the draft map, the final map. And one of the questions that was had earlier that was about, you know, when we have these advisory committees, do we generally expect the agencies to adopt the final plan that the committee creates? And I'd say, first off, that a lot of this is new. We had maybe a dozen or so of these kind of advisory committees in the 2011 redistricting cycle. We probably are going to have 100 of them in this redistricting cycle. So in a way, you are forging a new path for redistricting in the state. And when we've seen these in the past, we've seen both agencies that would follow or adopt the plan that was recommended. We've also seen agencies make tweaks to plans. Kind of most famously, the city of Los Angeles has had an advisory committee for a number of years that they would take the advisory committee work and make the changes they wanted and pass it. So the advisory committee wasn't as impactful. This year, they actually passed new rules to hopefully make that advisory committee, the work that they do, have a little bit more meaning in the process. But we've seen others where they've done this process historically and it has worked fine, and where the agency has passed the maps that were advised by the committee. So I expect that agencies that voluntarily do this process are likely to be the kind of agencies that will, you know, take what you produce and give it real weight in their process. And from that, I think we'll go into the next meeting that we're going to have will be in June, and that's when we'll do a training. And I think your staff did an excellent little slide here with an opportunity for questions. I will go ahead and close the screen share and be happy to answer any questions.
Well, if this hasn't scared anybody out of wanting to do this job, does somebody have any questions? It seems natural for you, Paul. It just rolls off your tongue. For those of us who are seeing it from the inside for the first time, man, there's a lot here. Do you think that we're going to get wrapped around the axle with all the stuff that's going on at the federal level with respect to this? There's more than just that one lawsuit. There's a lot of chatter going on about people claiming it's wrong.
So there are a lot of concerns about the quality of the census, that's for sure. And there were concerns about the quality of the census in 2011. And so I think the first chance for us to read the tea leaves on the quality of the census will come, we're thinking April 27th, but at latest by April 30th when they release the state-by-state numbers and allocate the number of members of Congress to each state. That's when we'll get a chance to see, as an example, did the southwestern states do more poorly than expected? And maybe we'll start to see some kind of a sense of the quality of the census that we are actually getting. But one of the nice things about your process versus the process for agencies that have primaries is that you can kind of let this noise happen, let the kind of chaos of October and November and agencies trying to get the redistricting done and questioning data and lawsuits and all that stuff. We're going to kind of let that wash past us and actually be adopting draft maps, you know, well after the other agencies have kind of figured it out. So it puts this process in a better footing to be confident that by the time we do get to adopting draft maps, a lot of those questions would be answered.
Yeah, excellent. Mike, you have questions?
Yeah, thank you for recognizing me. The question I had is there was a comment made that the data was not available for the first time ever. Can one provide the justification? What is the background of why that data was not available?
Yeah, so there's multiple reasons why the census was late. So first off, when they started the census, we knew that there were concerns about the quality of the census. They were launching for the first time an online tool. They were supposed to do 3 tests around the country. They did 1. I actually got to go meet with the census in Rhode Island after they did that first test. But it wasn't sufficiently tested and vetted. But they had to launch anyway. So in 2020, they launched the census. And then what happened almost immediately after they launched the census was COVID hit, and it really derailed a lot of their expected in-person canvassing that goes out and actually tries to increase response rates. The census this time, in the past, the census would do a mailing, and then they would do in-person people walking around collecting, you know, filling out forms. This cycle, they did the internet response, then they did mailers, and then they did the in-person walking around, but that in-person walking around was supposed to be done, you know, by the summer, and it stretched well into October. And it also, in the end of the period, was kind of fits and starts with the Census Bureau stopping and saying they were stopping, then a court forcing them to extend, and then, you know, that kind of stuff through the fall. So the late completion of the process we knew was going to delay the release of the data. In addition to that, there were technical challenges with changes that were made in actually how they were going to tabulate the data. So for one, we know that when they first launched the census, they were still trying to put a citizenship question in the actual decennial census. There is a citizenship question in that long-form American Community Survey, but they've never put a citizenship question in the census, and so there was some delays associated with that. Then there were further delays because the administration was asking the census to use administrative records from states to identify non-citizens in the decennial file, which was causing them to have to kind of invent new processes. They ended up rescinding that, and then again, the Census Department said, great, thanks, you now put us back even further because we had gone down the road of building this data set with these rules that were, you know, established by the prior administration. And now with the new administration, we have new rules, so we're going to be taking even longer. Originally, the Census Department said they were going to release the data by July 31st. And then after the Biden administration took effect and after a few weeks of conversations between the Biden administration and the Census, they rolled out this September 30th new deadline for the release of the decennial census. So I think that if we were to really say what is to blame for the late census, it's probably 80%, 85% COVID and maybe 15% changing of the rules and process midstream a few times through the entirety of this census operations.
Thank you for your explanation. I appreciate the clarity.
A lot went into that. Emily, you have some questions?
I have a question having to do with how we, it seems to me that there's kind of a fine line between cracking and packing and also maintaining communities of interest. We are going to have somebody who can advise us on that carefully. We're going to have access to legal counsel and other advice? Yes.
So there will be a number of avenues. I can definitely help the committee wade through some of these issues as we're doing it. But if we do get to a point where we need an attorney to actually nod their head and say, yes, this is a Section 2 issue, then we will work with your legal counsel to help them in that process of determining that. But it's always good to have an attorney basically, you know, bless that part of it so that the committee knows that what they're doing and the use of race as the predominant factor in drawing a district is allowed based on that attorney's viewpoint as to the need to follow the Federal Voting Rights Act.
And if I may, Chair Miller, thank you, Emily, for that question and Paul for that answer. And I just also want to affirm that we'll be utilizing legal counsel to support your efforts as well along the way.
I think several things you said to me, Paul, makes this a scary job. And one is you defined this situation where we have to thread the needle between all of these different requirements, some of which to us newbies almost seem directly contradictory. So we look forward to your guidance and to the extent needed legal counsel guidance to help us get through this.
Well, I'll tell you just one thing on that. One of the speakers that we generally have present to committees, Justin Levitt. He's not going to be able to join us because he was just appointed to the Biden administration to oversee their voter protection in the White House. So good for him, but bad for us. We're going to lose him. But one of the things he said that I thought was always really valuable is when you're thinking about the Voting Rights Act, think of it as the speedometer in your car. If you're driving along and you're looking at the road, you're looking at the sidewalk, you're looking for pedestrians and cyclists and red lights and speed and all this stuff, you have to make sure that you're following the speed limit too. But if you're driving and all you do is stare at the speedometer, what are you going to do? You're going to crash. So you need to have that ability to do your work and be cognizant of your speed and take in all these different factors at the same time. So it is challenging. It's not simple to do a real good, clean, open, transparent redistricting process, but we'll help guide you through it.
Yeah, excellent. All right, does anyone else have any other questions that are coming to mind at this moment? Okay, seeing none, then Don, what's our next steps?
Let's see, on the agenda, we've gone through this. I do want to go back, if you don't mind, to the timeline, and I want to make it clear to you folks that we want to be respectful of your time. And our chair made it clear when we were seeing these delays coming that we needed to get a meeting with the RAC and provide you an update and give you a sense of what the timeline is going to look like. We don't want to have meetings just for the sake of meetings. So that's why we established these briefings. And when you see that timeline, I believe it's June as the next one. This alludes to some of the information that we're going to provide that was requested by Mr. Morales. So this is tentative at this stage. As Paul mentioned, there may be changes, and he expects changes to come. So this is our tentative timeline that we're going to work from now. You'll see something from us for another meeting in June, and then we'll begin those training briefings so we prepare you enough for that September release to be ready to hit the ground running. So as far as next steps, I'll look to Glenna on the agenda. Is there anybody here for public comment? I don't believe there is.
I mean, we have to rely on staff that has the host views to be able to tell. So
yeah, I went through and didn't see anybody.
Oh, I'm looking now.
But while Glenna,
I don't see any hands raised.
And while Glenn is looking, I did want to acknowledge we had another director join us, Director John Varela. Thank you for attending. As I mentioned, there's a number of directors who wanted to watch the meeting and support you folks in any way they could. So thank you, Director Varela, for attending. So with nobody from the public to provide comments.
Don, one question on the schedule, and it's sort of the logistics side of this. We're all getting shots, and we're hoping the pandemic is kind of coming to a close, though it's a dicey proposition to even say those words in open public. Are we assuming that, at least for the time being, that we're going to be meeting via Zoom? And if we are going to come back to a physical meeting, there'll be some advance notice.
Absolutely. And I'm not going to speculate on when that may be. You know, I've heard comments around the state opening around June, but I've also heard comments around certain businesses or agencies or organizations or government agencies opening up in September. So those decisions are going to be made above my pay grade as to when we are going to open up our headquarters for public meetings. And we'll do it when it's safe. But until then, I'm going to hold off and even taking a guess because I'll probably be wrong. But our goal is right now Zoom until it's absolutely safe for you and the public.
Okay, so we get to assume
that there is legislation in the Capitol to require all redistrictings to at least provide a hybrid opportunity, even when we do come back, in order to make sure that those who feel most comfortable participating online still have an opportunity. So that hasn't been passed, but it is a bill that's in the legislature right now.
Thank you, Paul. And we did discuss that hybrid model, at least internally, and I might as well just share it now, is having if and when or when or if we get to public meetings, the headquarters is open and folks can still participate either through that meeting in person or remotely, as Paul mentioned.
Thank you for that information, Don.
Sure.
Mike's got his hand up. Mike, you got a question? Oops, unmute, Mike.
Now, can you hear me?
Yes.
Very good. Well, first of all, Howard, thank you very much for stepping up and becoming the chair here for our group. Thank you. But the question I have is, do we get a meeting report out of this presentation or these set of charts or something sent to us as the committee?
Yes, we're going to provide the presentation that you've just seen here in terms of the PowerPoint, and we'll distribute that to the full committee. And then, as I mentioned, whatever written materials we have as it relates to those briefings that are listed, we will get those to you either, of course, post. But honestly, we'd like to get those to you much earlier so you have time to review those.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure. And I have a couple action items for me in terms of the map, the materials, as Mr. Morales mentioned, and then also what you just asked as well.
So you guys did send out the slides for this meeting in advance, right? Because I have this PDF, and I didn't compare word for word, but they look like the slides you just showed us.
I believe yes.
Yes, through the chair. This is Glenna.
Thank you, Glenna.
You did get an email from me letting you know about the packet. And normally, if we have enough time, which we didn't this time, is you will get a hard copy in the mail if you so desire of the meetings.
Yeah, I found the PDF someplace attached to it all, and I downloaded that. So that was good, and hopefully everybody else could find it as well.
Thank you, Glenna.
So, Glenna, if somebody feels like they want hard copy, I'm good with electronic, for example, but they should send you an email. What would be the process?
Yes, send me an email if you do want a hard copy or if you don't want a hard copy, either way, because I normally, for my committees, I send a hard copy out. If you don't want it, then I won't send it. But you will get an email with the link as of now. When we're meeting via Zoom, you will get a link with the packet attached and or the location of our website where you can get the packet as well.
Excellent. Thank you, Glenda. Does anybody else have any questions about what we're doing, what the logistics are, any even tidbit that we can get somebody on staff to fill in for us now? I'm sure that people probably still have questions, but we do have Glenda's email address and we all have Jim's email address. So I'm sure if people have questions, they will know how to ask them via email. So Don, I think we're back to you. We finished questions. We've checked that there was no public comment. Okay. And then we just need a review of formal actions taken.
Well, I don't know. Glenna, was there any action that you need to provide any clarification?
No formal action that I received. No formal action, only the action that the committee did take today was to vote for the chair pro tem, which is Howard Miller.
Thank you, Glenna. And I don't know if Chair Stamberg.
And also, Don, before you end, I just wanted you to recognize the CEO calendar is on Zoom with us.
Yeah, he was going to, but then I think he might have stepped out. But he did attend for a good portion of this, and thank you, Glenna, for the reminder. And Chair Stamberg, okay. Did you have any parting comments that you'd like to offer? Or
well, just last one last thank you to all. I know it's going to be a little bit more lengthy than it usually is. You know, we generally get through by the end of the calendar year, but this year we're asking you to stay in until next year, just because of the circumstances. But thank you so much for continuing to help and support us. It's really important for the community to be involved in everything that we do. We bend over backwards to make sure that the community is involved. So I thank you an awful lot. My colleagues and I really appreciate when our constituents get involved. And believe me, we have a record, a really consistent record of listening to the community and acting accordingly and responding to what the community tells us and what the community suggests. What the community expects of us. So thank you again. Take care, and we'll see you at the next meeting.
Thank you, Chair. And you'll see an update from us, either in terms of some additional information that was asked for this evening, whether it's the map or other material, and then also a notification of our targeted next date for the next meeting. And I'll join our Chair, Esther Marin, in saying thank you for your time. So I think we just need a motion to adjourn at this stage. Is that correct, Glenna?
No motion, just the chair making an adjournment.
Okay.
That's a good procedural question because some committees require a vote on adjournment, and I always wondered what would happen if we voted no. But at this point, since we've passed for questions, I think we'll call this meeting adjourned. I want to thank all the staff members that set this up, our consultants that were prepared for us, and all of my fellow appointees. Apparently they've got a lot set up for us. So thank you guys all for being here tonight. Everybody have a good night.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you, Chair Pro Tem.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks all the committees. Thanks, Don, thank you. Rachel, Jim, Lisa. Thank you, Chair. Good night, directors.